Get ready to jump off Zod. We're gonna get you with the hard count.
Come on!
Hosted by two guys who babble more than Manning at the line of scrimmage.
Red, right, orange, purple!
Here's Aaron Nagler.
Don't shut me up!
And Andrew Garda.
I'm freaking velvety smooth.
And here we go.
Here we go again. Another week of NFL action in the books. Another hard count. I'm Andrew Garda. Tonight on the show, we go to Texas and talk about how Dallas could be 4-0, or they could be 0-4, but maybe they could be 2-2, could be 3-1, could be 1-3. In an alternate reality, they're probably populated by superheroes. And then we're heading to Indianapolis and how the Colts decided that maybe possibly Kerry Collins is actually a better choice than Painter? What? Then we'll be heading back to the South and talk about Hank Williams Jr. for the first and last time on this show. His press agent is very, very happy. Anybody cares what he has to think about anything. And talk about the Lions and the hype that some people are feeling maybe spinning out of control in Detroit. I tell you, man, you can't. Why are you going to harsh the Detroit mellow right now? Why are you going to ruin their fun? I don't know. We're going to hit all that. I'm going to put myself on the spot. We're going to talk NFL picks for Week 5. This is the hard count. I'm Andrew Garda, and we are Naglerless. Ooh, that was not easy coming off the tongue. Tonight, again, Aaron had a conflicting event. However, if you need your Nagler fix, why, you can always get it on Packers Transplants. And where is that? Every Wednesday night here on CheeseheadTV.com. Of course, this is the NFL Sanity Podcast, and everything else is Packer-related. So, I am your oasis of non-cheeseheadness. But Aaron and Corey Behnke will be doing the Packers Transplants again tomorrow night. So, if you need to hear some Aaron, tune in there. Otherwise, stick right here. We're going to talk about a lot of different things today. And we're going to make some ridiculous statements because that's what we do. But the most ridiculous thing I heard, and those of you who read my Monday/Tuesday column from the press box, you've already heard some of this tirade. If you follow me on Twitter, you've already heard some of this tirade. But you know, Bob Costas, Sunday night, you know, I understand. I get it. You know, maybe there's a little jealousy in this hatred of people's mistakes like this. And I get that perhaps, you know, I should cut guys making millions of dollars slack when they say stupid things. But I'm sorry. I mean, I got to go back to this well one more time for those of you who haven't read the column. But if you didn't watch Sunday Night Football when my Jets were absolutely train wreck demolished by the Baltimore Ravens, I mean, that was a behind the woodshed, beat them like you own them sort of butt-kicking ass-whooping. I mean, it was awful. Awful. By the way, also in from the press box, we talk about the O-line. Because, Jets kept telling you needed more O-line help. Kept telling you. Didn't listen. Mark Sanchez got the crap kicked out of him. Anyway, halftime. All the things going on in the NFL, we could talk more Mike Vick, we could talk about all sorts of things. We're going to talk about Tony Romo yet again. Okay, so let's just start at that point and start there. So Bob Costas, not a dumb guy, smart guy by all accounts. So Bob Costas is going to sit there, and of all the things in the world he could talk about, what he's going to talk about is Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys. As if we haven't heard this, not only this season, every single week. And I mean every week. Tony Romo is a topic of conversation in the NFL media. Right? But not only have we heard this, but for years. We get it, Bob. Tony's streaky. Sometimes he's good. Sometimes he's not. The next thing you're going to tell me is Mike Vick likes to run. And, you know, Darrelle Revis is good. The Packers might, you know, have a good quarterback. Like, the water's wet. All right? So, first of all, you're not only going over area well-tread, it's been well-tread recently. It's all right. So maybe you can make a case for it's valid because Tony Romo came off the mat with a punctured lung and came back and won, and then he flopped and lost on Sunday. Maybe that's a topic of conversation that's worth having. I don't think it is, but maybe. So you go through the whole Tony Romo thing, talking about Romo, talking about what he does, what he doesn't do, blah, 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 coffee is for closers. And after wasting my time for 5 minutes of crap I've already heard many other people say repeatedly and ad nauseum, you're going to bust out the, well, the Dallas could be 4-0, they could be 0-4, but they're 2-2. I'm sorry, do you figure that we failed basic math? And, you know, why didn't you throw in the, they could be 1-3, they could be 3-1? What the hell is this? What is this? Now, I not everybody always has a strong take about everything. You know, I was saying in the column, I gave Al Michaels some crap on Twitter, not that I'm sure he cares, because at the beginning of the Sunday game, there's kickoff, and the Ravens Ravens get the kick, and they fumble it, and Joe McKnight, jet about town, really is the way to describe him. He's everywhere. He even played defense Sunday night. Jeez. But so McKnight forced a fumble. Ravens keep it. And Al Michaels was talking about the Joe McKnight, you know, making a great run or saving the Jets from something. Like, he didn't make any sense. And it sounded like he was saying McKnight had the ball. It was a mess. I mean, it was a bad opening to a Sunday game. But whatever. Listen, it's live color play-by-play. You know, it's play-by-play. It's off the cuff. You don't know what's going to happen. I'll give you crap for it at the time. But unless it's something like when the Thursday night guys, I think it was a couple years ago, so I'm not sure which booth it was. But the Thursday night guys on NFL Network were like calling Frank Gore, like Fred Gore, repeatedly and butchering names of multiple guys. There's no excuse for that. But, you know, Al Michaels biffs it at the beginning. That's fine. Caught a little crap from people on Twitter, but come on. I mean, that's when you have fun with it. But that's one thing. Bob Costas had time to write this. This is a scripted piece. Like, I'm betting that they didn't just let him go off the cuff. That's not really how the TV works. You know, if you can script something, you script it, because that way you can control the message, you can make sure they're not going to say anything outrageous, get the FCC all angry. You know, so Bob Costas' best take to summarize everything he's just poured me to tears telling me is, Dallas could be 4-0, they could be 0-4, but they are 2-2. That's inane. That's stupid. That's a waste of everyone's time. Bad enough you went on and on and on about Tony Romo. Yet another person piling on. At the end, the best you could tell me is that they could be other records, but they're not. This is what you're getting the $1 million or whatever the hell you get every week. This is how you earn your keep. What's even better is Peter King parroted this in his column on Tuesday. I think it was on Tuesday. Might have been Monday. No, it was Monday. Sorry, it was his Monday morning quarterback column. And I like Peter King. Like, I read him. He's entertaining. I think he's often an interesting and entertaining writer. I think sometimes PK, I'm with the guys at Kissing Susie Kolber. Enough with the baseball references. Enough with the sort of middling, I don't want to make an opinions. King parroting what Costas said is just as ridiculous. But Bob Costas, you know, who's one of the faces of the NBC NFL football package on Sunday night. This is what you give me. This is what your face gave me. You know, rip on Berman as much as you want for his ridiculous nicknames that really need to be retired. You know, give some of the studio people crap for not always being the brightest bulbs. But I guarantee you that none of them would append the, Dallas could be 4-0. They could be 0-4. They are 2-2. You know, button on the end of that piece. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Have an opinion. Have a take. You know what? No, I don't want to bring Jim Rome into this, but I will. I don't know if he still does it because I don't listen to his show, but there was a point when I was living in Los Angeles where I did. And his rule, if you were calling in, was have a take and don't suck. And you know what? In sports radio, that is something you have to point out for fans. You shouldn't have to tell Bob Costas that. Dude, have a take. Have a strong take you can support. Follow it up. Don't waffle. Don't say, maybe some other stuff. Maybe the point you're trying to make was that Tony Romo, like, could be playing better, could be playing worse. Like, I don't even know. I don't even know what that had to do with the Tony Romo speech. But have a take. Say, you know what? If Romo was able to play consistently and well, Tony Romo would have the Dallas Cowboys at 4-0. Or, you know what? Tony Romo's been lucky for 2 games. Really, what he's shown me is that he should be 0-4. Give me something. You know, give me anything. But that piece, that sucked. I'm sorry. That was neither a take, and it was neither a take nor was it good. It sucked. And I'm kind of tired of hearing crap like this from analysts. It's the John Gruden method. You know, God love Gruden. You know, he's enjoyable to listen to because the man just loves everybody. Like, I can't remember. If I sat there and watched all of the games he did, I'm pretty sure I would probably be able to count the negative things he said about players on, like, a hand. That's Gruden. All right? That's annoying. It's annoying in color commentary. It's not the worst thing, but it's annoying in part because we all assume that Gruden's going to be going after a job, and so he's trying not to piss anyone off. It's unconscionable when Bob Costas does it. There is absolutely no reason Bob Costas, in a scripted segment, lacks a cohesive take at the end of his take that he has to rely on. Could be 4-0, could be 0-4, could be pie, could be cake. I don't freaking know. It's a waste of my time. It is why, NBC, I don't tend to watch your halftime shows, and I almost never watch your pregame shows. Like, I could live without the Tony Dungy moralizing. Usually he has a take. I'm not Harrison's biggest fan. The man comes with an opinion. Maybe you guys hate Keith Olbermann because he's a jerkwad, but the man had an opinion. Dan Patrick has an opinion. If Bob Costas is what he's bringing us, I don't want it. You know, there are tons of things I could do for the 15 minutes in between halves. This is terrible. It's awful. And you really need to figure something out. I can't be the only person who's sitting here ripping my hair out over it. In fact, I know I'm not. So that's my opening take. Maybe it was good. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know, but it is. Unbelievable. Also unbelievable, the Indianapolis Colts. They may not go with Curtis Painter. Maybe they'll go back to Kerry Collins. I'm sorry. Was Kerry Collins doing really well for you prior to this Painter experience this past weekend? Because I'm saying the answer is no. You know, Kerry Collins, let's take a quick look at stats here. Okay, Collins, aside from looking like he aged 40 years in the 3 games he played, Kerry Collins this year was 48 completions on 98 attempts, 481 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. Now, it's not disastrous, but it's not pretty. And then let's take a look at Curtis Painter. Painter, who came in and played against a Tampa Bay defense that, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Tampa Bay. I'm not 100% sure, but the defense plays pretty well. They're not top of the league, but they don't suck. They play pretty well. All right, in one game, Painter was 13 of 30, 281 yards, and two touchdowns, no turnovers. Now, granted, this is not going to win them the Super Bowl. But two things. One, he's already better than Collins. Already looked a little more poised, was able to go vertical a little bit more, bigger arm. Looked less like he was going to collapse of a heart attack. And two, you know what? You guys have to start thinking about what happens after Manning. Because that is rapidly coming. That situation is approaching faster than anyone expected it to. All right, so you need to figure out what you're going to do after Manning. Fair enough. I don't think Curtis Painter is your long-term answer, but hell, you might as well find out. You're 0-4. It's unlikely you're going to make the playoffs, much less a run at the Super Bowl. Not in that division. Not with the Texans playing well. Even Tennessee looks better than you. Just not happening. Find out what you have in Painter. See what you have in him. Might as well. At worst, you walk away going, he's a pretty good backup, but long term, kid doesn't have what it takes. At least you know. But what game are you playing at this point? Do you really think that anyone thinks you're going to throw Collins back in there? If you do, then you guys are dumber than anyone gave you credit for. And Jim Caldwell proving that maybe it's Manning who runs this show anyway. But you got to put in Painter, in my opinion. If you're the Colts, you just looked better with him. Right? And he was under pressure. You know, Claiborne and Daquan Bowers was in there, and there was a lot of movement along the defensive line. They got in Painter's face more than once. Painter looked like he didn't look like he was freaking out. And to me, that goes a long way towards telling me that maybe this guy should have a shot at starting. And again, you got nothing to lose. You might as well do it because there is nowhere to go but up. By the way, you know, speaking of a team that has disappointed me a bit and has done some odd things at times play-wise, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know what's misfiring on that offense. Josh Freeman has taken a whole huge step back. LeGarrette Blount is a freaking beast. That guy is a load. He was almost unstoppable. Now everybody can run against the Colts, but he looked really good. And there was a long run there where he showed some very good vision and some good athleticism. Some agility people think he doesn't have. You know, the Bucs are so close. So close. And just can't quite put it over the top. They know what their franchise quarterback is. I think the Colts might want to find out if Painter has a shot at it. Again, I don't think he does, but you might as well know before you have to go suck for Luck. Or Shocker for Barkley or whatever the hell. You know, there's going to be quarterbacks, and guess what? You're in a position to draft one. I have the same opinion about Denver right now. And we know what Kyle Orton is. Kyle Orton is not the answer long term. And Nagler and I were talking about this back in August. I think we were talking about this in July. But Aaron and I were saying, you know Orton's not the answer. Find out what you have in Tebow. You might as well, because guess what? Denver, like the Colts, you're going to be in position to grab a quarterback. 2012 draft, there's a good chance you're going to have a top 10 pick. The last thing you really need is sitting there going, we can grab Matt Barkley, for example. We can get Landry Jones. But, we got Tebow. Is Tebow the answer? I don't know. The only answer I know, you know, I don't know if he's, I said this in the column today, I don't know if he's a good quarterback. I don't even know if he's a quarterback. I do know that he's not Kyle Orton. And Kyle Orton can't score in the red zone. At this point, hell, find out, I mean, screw the locker room. I don't think that it's going to be so bad. If Tebow can manage a win, I don't think that locker room is going to bitch that loud about Orton being gone. And oh, by the way, Miami, call Denver. Yeah, Chad Henne may be gone for the season. And Matt Moore looked mediocre at best yet again. You're bringing in Jake Delhomme and David Garrard. Let me say this very slowly, because I'm sure that my listeners out here can't really believe what they just heard. The Miami Dolphins brought in, or started talking to, David Garrard and Jake, I stole money from the Browns and Carolina Panthers, Delhomme. What the hell, folks? What are you thinking, Miami? What's the thought process there? Jake Delhomme looked horrific last year. So bad that Colt McCoy got the start, even though he was nowhere near ready. He's bad. On any scale, he's bad. He may be Kerry Collins bad. And Garrard? He's a competent space filler, maybe. But honestly, I don't get that. I mean, Garrard I can kind of convince myself into. Jacksonville fans will laugh. But I can kind of talk myself into that. He's looking for a way to prove himself. He's probably not going to cost a lot. He's well known in Florida. Delhomme, I don't get. But at this point, if you're Miami, wouldn't you maybe open up the lines of communication to Denver? See if maybe they come down on their price a little bit? I don't think Orton would be the long-term answer for Miami any more than he is for Denver. But ultimately, he's better than what they have now. And I think he's better than Garrard and much better than Delhomme. I know he's better than Jake Delhomme. Let's be honest, folks. Miami, and I've said it before, I feel bad for a Dolphin fan. I think the ownership of Miami is not good. It's horrible. And I think they will continue to prove that with moves like, say, if they sign Jake Delhomme, then they are sucking for luck. Then they're throwing the season, I'm convinced. Because there is no way that you really honestly want to bring Jake Delhomme into this. I can't imagine how that's an upgrade. Keep Matt Moore. Just go with Matt Moore. As bad as he may be, just save yourself money and go with Matt Moore. Hell, bring Pat White back. But for the love of God, do not sign Jake Delhomme. And I'm a Jets fan. So imagine how horribly bad this idea must seem that I'm there telling you don't sign Jake Delhomme. Folks, I'm telling you, I'm flabbergasted. I call shenanigans on that. Speaking of shenanigans, Hank Williams Jr., you know, the guy who does the Monday Night Football song, who basically is floating along on the fact that he's Hank Williams Sr.'s son. Those of you who may have noticed that ridiculously dated and somewhat aggravating song was not played before last night's Tampa Bay Colts debacle. And that was because Hank Williams, in an interview on Fox News, not CNN, not NPR, somehow he ended up on Fox News saying that the decision of President Obama to golf with House Speaker John Boehner was akin to Hitler golfing with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The level of stupidity in that comment really speaks for itself. It's so not fitting. I mean, and I understand it was over the top to prove a point, but yeah, I kind of think it's totally not like it at all. But ESPN being ESPN decided that it was going to take action on this issue, not the Craig James getting Leach fired at Texas Tech issue, or the fact that James was reporting a story he was involved in. You know, they're not going to deal with that, but damn it, Hank Williams Jr. called Obama maybe kind of sort of Hitler or possibly the Israeli prime minister, so damn it, we're gonna embargo him for a week. So they yanked him, and I don't think anybody really cared or noticed. But Williams came out today and sort of did what is on the famous person's version of a half-assed apology. It essentially was like, well, I was trying to go over the top to prove a point. All I know is, you know, seeing these guys do high fives, you know, on the ninth hole while people are homeless and don't have any jobs, you know, it makes me sick, makes people angry. I'm like, I don't understand quite how those two golfing has anything to do with the economy. Like, they're not allowed to relax until everybody has a job, which, you know, isn't a standard that any president or anyone has ever been held to. And oh, by the way, Obama has, like, very little to do with the economy. Just like Bush had very little to do with the economy. You know, where the difference between the two is the fact that, you know, the Republican Party, when Bush was in office, was happy to give a lot of breaks to big business and oil that were not always the smartest things. And a lot of bailouts happened. Some of that's happened in the Obama administration. But ultimately, presidents don't have that much of an impact on the economy. Not unless you're at war. So I guess Bush did, but not all that much, because we're not the same industrialized society we were in World War II, which is how FDR meant. I'm sorry, I'm going all historical history channel on you. But needless to say, Hank Williams Jr. kind of apologized, but also wanted us to know that, like, he really didn't mean the apology. It's the James Harrison school of apology, by the way. But to me, it's, who cares? You know, again, where was ESPN's head? Like, I guess some people are going to be upset. I don't really know who those people were. Most people couldn't name who the hell he, you know, Hank Williams Jr. is. This is his one thing. I don't think anybody listens to him for political debate. Not totally sure why he was on Fox News. But, you know, news channels, be it Fox, be it CNN, will drag anybody with a name onto the screen and get their opinion on stuff they're wholly unqualified to opinionate on. But people like to see it. People like to see famous people giving opinions on stuff that they should really not be commenting on. But so ESPN's decision is, so we're going to yank him off the air for a week or however long. Listen, you know, let's dovetail this into something that kind of matters, which is the fact that the NFL and the entertainment industry seems to have absolutely no idea who anybody cares to see or what they're saying. I don't think that anybody is being brought into ESPN for Monday Night Football gives a damn about Hank Williams Jr. I'm not saying you've got to have, you know, I don't know, Ludacris doing it. You know, but Faith Hill is a more contemporary and talented person that they've had do stuff that football has used. But it's like having, like, Madonna, the Super Bowl. For who? Like whose idea of a great Super Bowl act is this now? Who's it for? I you know, there's a demographic shift that I must be missing. And again, I don't need Justin Bieber up there, but yeah, it wouldn't be music I would enjoy, but I don't expect to see music I'm going to enjoy at the Super Bowl to begin with. Like, nobody's throwing AC/DC and Metallica or Faith No More up there. Like, there's going to be no Billy Joel halftime show. The Young Dubliners are not getting their opportunity to play pregame. You know, none of these bands, nobody I listen to, you know, is going to be out there. Not any of them, not Ludacris, not anybody that I like. But I don't know, Madonna, like, her, who peaked in, like, the 90s? If that, maybe she peaked in the 80s? Like, who's dragging these guys out? This is like, who's naming these people as halftime show guys? Like, Black Eyed Peas was, I guess, contemporary. I mean, but compared to Madonna, they happened yesterday. But so I don't see any tragedy in Hank Williams Jr. not doing this. Everybody's getting rowdy on Monday nights or whatever the hell the song is that I don't get. I'm not even saying, you know, oh, country music's stupid. I like some country music. I just don't think that song's very good. And I don't think Hank Williams Jr. really brings anything to the party. But as publicist, and really, in some ways, ESPN should be thankful for this, because no publicity is bad publicity. So I'm going to take a brief water break and then come back with some discussion of the Detroit Lions and some NFL picks. This is The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda, and I'll be right back after these non-messages. Keep the heads ringing. Welcome back to the show. This is Andrew Garda. This is The Hard Count. And, of course, we've got to keep your head ringing as we go through the NFL and talk about everything that's going on in the National Football League, touch on all of the big stories. Not a ton of huge big stories right now. Of course, we touched on the Curtis Painter, Kerry Collins decision. Is that really a decision? And I got the rant on Bob Costas. So far, I'd say shows a thumbs up. Unfortunately, as I said at the top, no Aaron Nagler tonight, but hopefully he'll be back soon. And remember to check out Packers Transplants every Wednesday night live on CheeseheadTV.com as well as live stream. And you can also download it and all the other fine Cheesehead TV programs on iTunes. You know, that small company, Apple something, people may have heard of them. Anyway, so we got some more stuff to go over. Apparently, people are hyping up the Lions too much. As I said really early on in the program, guys, come on. I mean, really, what has Detroit got going on right now? I got the Tigers, I guess. But basically, it's been a long haul for the Lions. And Pro Football Talk, Michael David Smith was basically saying, hey, the Lions are overhyped. Sports Illustrated got them on the cover. A lot of people talking about them all the time. Basically, MDS was saying, you know, the Lions aren't even as good as the other 4-0 team, the Packers. So they're just not. And they're probably not as good as several 3-1 teams, including the Saints, Patriots, Ravens, and Bills. Okay, hold up. Wait a minute. Let me put some boom in it, because the Packers, maybe we can have an argument about. I mean, honestly, you know, the Packers have some issues. They got a banged-up secondary. They've got some issues. They've got Aaron Rodgers, and they've got a fantastic offense. Defense has Clay Matthews the third. Where is Clay? He's not playing particularly well. So defense has been scored on. It's not necessarily stopping the run. It's not really stopping the pass. I don't know. I think you can make an argument that the Packers aren't exactly the second coming of a dynasty right now. And I think you can make an argument with the Lions. Matt Stafford is having a very good season. Calvin Johnson is unconscious. Javid Best is playing well. Burleson's doing all right. Titus Young, rookie wide receiver, playing well. Pettigrew's playing well. Defensively, Dominican Sue is fantastic. The defense has been playing well. MDS has a problem with the fact that ESPN's Jamila Hill, who I had the pleasure of meeting at Blogswood Balls about a week and a half ago, very nice lady, knows her stuff. I was very impressed. I always liked her columns. I came away very impressed with her after that weekend. I think, You know, she comes off well on TV and in her columns. She really comes off well. She's very sharp in person. But I guess she wrote a column trying to make the case that Dominican Sue is a better draft pick for the Lions than Barry Sanders was. And she said, Sue already seems to have done something Sanders never could, changed the Lions' losing culture, or at least been the most important catalyst in that change. And MDS says, let's not go overboard here. Sue hasn't changed anything in Detroit yet, except for the losing attitude, because Sue won't stand for it and holds his teammates accountable and has been, as Hill said, a catalyst for change in that attitude. Through four games this year, he hasn't had the same impact he has at a rookie. Well, that's because people have tape on him. The fact that he still has an impact speaks volumes about how good he is. So let's wait until he's played more than 20 games in his NFL career, and until the Lions have won more than half of those games, before we start comparing him to an all-time great player like Sanders. Now, I am on that tip with MDS. Oop, sorry, dropping stuff here in the office. You don't want to change, you don't want to throw out that as good as sort of thing too early in a guy's career. And Sanders worked very hard to try and lift that offense. But let's be honest, he never was able to change that losing culture. Now, maybe the ownership, maybe the coaching staff has a lot to do with it as well. I'm sure they do. But right now, I mean, what is Sanders really, what was he able to do for the Lions? And I'm not saying Sanders wasn't a fantastic running back. He's my favorite running back of all time. I think he's the greatest, one of the greatest running backs. I think you could make the argument for he's up there among the greats, and had he continued to play and not just burn out, I think he could be the greatest. He did a lot. MDS points out that by Sanders' third season in 91, the Lions were in the NFC Championship game. You know, so we'll see. But, you know, let's take a look at what Sue has done. You know, he has taken a culture that has been a train wreck for years and helped turning it around. Can you compare him to Sanders? It's early. But to say he hasn't changed anything in Detroit, yeah, I'm sorry, I can't play with that. And then to also, you know, getting back to the 3-1 teams that are better than the Detroit Lions, the Saints have a banged up receiving core, have struggled to move the ball at times, can't get their run game going, and have a questionable defense. The Patriots have no defense at all. And the Bills haven't proven anything. I mean, the Bills are good. And, you know, I don't doubt them the way I did a couple weeks ago when Nagler and I were talking about it. But you look at the Bills and you look at the Lions, I'm sorry, the Lions haven't beat on paper everywhere. And until the two of them play, really doesn't matter? I mean, that's the only comparison we have. So you're going to tell me that the Bills are better than the Lions? No. No, not even remotely close. I like Fitzpatrick. I've come on board. Matt Stafford is much better. Calvin Johnson, much better than Stevie Stiles. Listen, I watched Steve Johnson train, came away very impressed with him. You know, the Draft Guys TV stuff that we did with him, I think all of us were convinced that he had lifted Andre Woodson up, not vice versa, and that's been borne out at this point. But Calvin Johnson is on a whole nother level. Yeah, Fred Jackson. Now, there you can have the argument. Fred Jackson, job at best. Fred Jackson's probably a better, he's a better all-around back. But defensively, the Lions are far better than the Bills. I mean, I don't know, maybe the hype is teetering out of control, as MDS says, but the hate is starting to teeter out of control as well. I mean, why is it impossible to be impressed with what the Lions have done? You know, just a couple years ago, they were horrible. They were still trying to figure out what went wrong with the Matt Millen era. This to me, this article and this attitude, which I have read in several places, to me, screams of, I want to be different than everyone else. It's a contrarian opinion for the sake of being contrarian. Now, yeah, they had to come back in a couple of games. The old Lions would have folded. These Lions don't. These Lions are healthy. These Lions are talented. And they are determined. I'm not going to call them Super Bowl or anything, but this is a better than people expected Detroit Lions team. I mean, really. It's funny because MDS ends the article with like, and even if they beat the Bears on Monday night, even if, I don't even get into that. That just means they're the second best team in the NFC North. Listen, when the first best team is Green Bay Packers, just won the Super Bowl, making it sound a lot worse than it is, brother. Because I'll tell you what, you know, I'd like to be the second best team in the NFC North with a shot to prove you wrong. It's not like it's the NFC West. You know, it's not like, oh, they're the second best team in the NFC West beyond San Francisco, which really sucks. I mean, that's the most backhanded compliment I've ever heard. And it's not even accurate. I mean, it's not even, doesn't even have the weight that he plays it up to make. That just means they're second best team in the NFC North. Well, yeah, maybe the NFC North having the Packers in it. It's not like they're second best to. It's not like they're second best to the 1-3 Eagles. It's not like they're second best to the 0-4 Colts. I don't know. You know, I'm a Lions believer. I've wanted them to do well for years. I used to follow them when I was a kid. Barry Sanders, one of the greatest players I've ever had the pleasure of seeing play football. I want the Lions to do well. I'll admit that the hype is a little out of control. But I'm sorry. Like, this article, I can't do it. Like, I can't do it. I can't look at it and even come close to agreeing it. I can't put the Bills above the Lions. I can't put the Pats with that horrible secondary above the Lions. I can't put the Saints above the Lions right now. I can make the argument for the Ravens and the Packers. Of the teams that they mention, that's it. Anything else is just being crotchety. I do think that the Lions, you know, the key is still health. They've done a great job of keeping Matt Stafford on his feet, not hit as much, just in general playing very good football, and that's what they got to do. And it's going to be tough to come out of the NFC to the Super Bowl. Getting past Green Bay is a tough chore. Getting past Saints, tough chore. Potentially the Falcons would be a tough chore, but if Stafford's healthy, they should be able to pick that secondary apart. And with Sue, and if Fairley can get, you know, on the field, that defensive lineup, that front seven, that'll murderify Atlanta's offensive line, or what passes for it these days. Did you know that the Lions' offensive line has only allowed 5 sacks so far this season? That's 5th in the league. 5th least in the league. 5 sacks. They have let up more QB hits. They've let up 20. 20 kind of puts them right in the middle. Like, right in the middle. But they're generally doing a pretty good job of protecting Stafford. I really can't fault them for 20 hits on Stafford. They're playing very good football. It's interesting because we've kind of ripped on the Eagles' offensive line, but they've generally been doing pretty well as well. Like, overall, and pardon me while my computer apparently is taking off. It sounds like a jet engine in here. I don't know if you could hear that. But honestly, the Eagles' offensive line has been playing well. I think it's just too young to really be counted on to protect Vic. the guy who can freelance, like, at any given time. You just never know what's going to happen. Hey, Packer note that just came across the wire in Pro Football Talk. Brett Favre was apparently surprised it took Rodgers 3 years to win the Super Bowl. During a Tuesday appearance on 790 The Zone in Atlanta, Favre sprayed a little cheese whiz on the 2010 accomplishments of his successor in Green Bay. Mike Florio's got a way with words. It's more of a backhanded slap. He said he was asked about whether he was surprised by Rodgers winning a Super Bowl. I'm going to be honest, he said, I was not surprised. The biggest surprise would be that he didn't do it sooner. Last year in Green Bay, prior to the first game, I made the remark that this was probably the most talented team I'd ever played with. And, of course, everyone looked up and was like, this guy's off his rocker. We were very, very young. Take me out of the mix, and we were by far the youngest team in the league. I could see the talent pool across the board was outstanding. Now our season kind of ended up being a reflection of that. We came close, and I think we took a lot of people by surprise, but guys emerged rather quickly. Aaron had a chance, even though the last couple of years it seemed like he's almost a rookie. He's been around a while. And I'd like to think that he watched, he learned, and when he got a chance to play, he brought his ability, which is obviously very good, or they wouldn't have drafted him in the first round. He's got tremendous talent, he's very bright, he got a chance to watch and see successful teams do it right. And so he kind of fell into a good situation. There's your backhanded compliment of the day, folks. On top of that, he's a good player. I don't think anyone would question now the talent around him is even better than when I was there. So I'm really kind of surprised it took so long. Really, the early part of last year's season, that's a hell of a sentence, it hadn't quite clicked yet, and I didn't know if it would. See, here's a press moment for you, because, I don't know, like, it was a little backhanded compliment for Rodgers. Just kind of fell into a good situation. It's not completely without merit. I don't feel like he really ripped on the Packers. I don't know. See, this would be good to have Aaron here because he could tell me whether this was insulting to you Packer fans. You guys can let me know as well. I don't feel like it is. I feel like he's saying, Rodgers was incredibly talented. I'm surprised it took them that long to win a Super Bowl. I mean, that's more like, well, I knew he was going to... I mean, he could have said, I knew he was going to struggle because he still was raw. So I knew it'd take a while. So I'm surprised he made it this soon. I don't know. I don't really know exactly how much of a story that is, but I saw it, so I thought I would throw a little bone to my Packer faithful here. Sorry, we got about 12 minutes left in the taped show, which really can run as long as I want it to. Ever since Aaron put me on the spot, I've been doing that when I'm solo. I didn't actually stop to look how I did last week. One of these days, I probably should. Well, let's go around the league. Let's talk about some of the games, or all of the games, that we're going to see in Week 5. Of course, we have byes this week. Miami Dolphins, Baltimore Ravens, Cleveland Browns, Dallas Cowboys, Washington Redskins, and the St. Louis Rams. The Dolphins, Browns, Cowboys, and Rams all needed that bye really badly. Remaining on the docket, we start off Tennessee Titans going to meet the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, 2-3 weeks ago, this was a easy pick. You know, without a doubt, the Steelers were going to run away with this one. The Titans were a mess. You know, they were in transition. The biggest problem with the Titans right now is they don't have Kenny Britt. Chris Johnson seems to be back on track. 3-1 Titans. Steelers on the ropes, defensively having problems. The offensive line is horrid, one of the worst in the league, and by and large, they're struggling to win games. However, they're home, and I do think that they're going to step up and play very well. I think they're going to be able to put 7 men in a box, 8 men in a box. They could have 11 men in the box, because I don't think that Matt Hasselbeck is going to be able to throw very effectively against the secondary. So I think the Steelers are going to come out with one. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but the Steelers are come out on top, be 3-2, and send the Titans home to Tennessee at 3-2. Moving on next, the Oakland Raiders visit the Houston Texans. Houston Texans all the way. Now, Andre Johnson being out makes this a little bit more difficult, but Arian Foster is healthy. And I do think that with Owen Daniels and the backup wide receivers here, it's going to be too much for the Raiders. The X factor here is going to be Darren McFadden. Can the Texans slow him, nay, stop him from lighting them up? I think they can. At home, I think the Texans are going to be a tough out for the Raiders. I don't think they're going to be able to get it done. Sorry, Raiders fans, but I see the Texans coming, and I see this being not a blowout, but a pretty good win for the Texans. Moving on, the Suck Bowl. Kansas City Chiefs at 1-3 visit the woeful 0-4 Colts. This is the best chance the Colts will have for the foreseeable future to win a game. The Chiefs are god-awful. The Colts are potentially even worse. If Kerry Collins is behind center, then there's no hope. But if they go with Painter, I do honestly think that the Colts could come away with this one. Chiefs are still trying to figure out what to do now that Jamaal Charles is gone. Dwayne Bowe's playing well. Matt Castle is not particularly playing well. I think that the Colts wise up and throw Curtis Painter out there. And I think with Painter, the Colts could come away and win. There are times when they looked serviceable. Serviceable, not spectacular. The byword of the show. But I think the Colts could have won against Tampa Bay. And it made me very nervous in the suicide pool I was in. I think this is one week you can't automatically pick against the Colts. I think that the Colts at home beat the Chiefs and end up at 1-4. And both teams will be sucking for luck equally. Moving on, Cincinnati Bengals visit the Jacksonville Jaguars. Blaine Gabbert, Andy Dalton. Oh, my goodness. Now, part of the question here is, will Cedric Benson be able to play? I have not seen any news on this yet. And I'll double-check it before I close down for the night and finish this up. But if Benson is playing, you know they're going to run the ball well. If they don't, Bernard Scott should fit in pretty well, as will Brian Leonard. A.J. Green, there are too many weapons for the Bengals and too good a defense. The Bengals' defense, I mean, I keep saying it's underrated, but it can't be underrated anymore. I really like the Bengals' defense this week against Blaine Gabbert and the Jaguars. I think the only thing they have to worry about is MJD. And Jones-Drew, he just can't quite carry this offense by himself. So I'm saying the Cincinnati Bengals win on the road in Jacksonville. Moving on, the Seattle Seahawks head to the new Meadowlands to take on the New York Football Giants. You don't even need a long explanation of this. This is the Giants the whole way. I think we're going to see a good Eli Manning. Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs will run the ball effectively against this front seven. And I just don't think offensively that the Hawks have the guns to keep up with Eli Manning and Hakeem Nicks. So the Giants in a laugher at home against the Seahawks. The 0-4 Vikings welcome the 1-3 Cardinals, and the Cardinals, who I remember after week one, everyone was like, oh, maybe these Cardinals are pretty good, yet turns out not really. However, the Vikings may be worse. The Vikings need to figure out exactly how they can possibly get more out of Adrian Peterson, probably by running the ball in the second half. It's just a thought. I think this is a get-right game for the Cardinals. Normally, I wouldn't want to bet against a team at home when the team coming in is mediocre at best. But like with the Bengals, I think the Cardinals have too many weapons for the Vikings, and the Vikings don't have a good enough defense. So I'm calling the Cardinals, and Kevin Cobb has a pretty good game. Beanie Wells is able to get off the schneid and have another good game. I think the Vikings, with the exception of Adrian Peterson, are going to have a rough go of it. So Cardinals are going to go and punk Minnesota in their own house. Moving on, the Saints and the Panthers. Once again, I like the away team. Drew Brees. It doesn't matter who he's throwing the ball to, they're good. You're going to see Jimmy Graham, the tight end, get a lot of play. Lance Moore, if he's healthy and feeling up to it. I keep waiting for Mark Ingram to really start going off, but it's Darren Sproles all the way on this offense right now. I do think that as the season progresses, you're going to see more and more Ingram. But right now, they don't really need to worry about it. I mean, he's getting carries. Sproles is just doing more. I don't think the Panthers have what it takes to slow down the Saints offense. They have some better than advertised players in Carolina, but not good enough. And I like Cam Newton. I think he'll have a pretty good day. He's not going to be able to pull this one out, though. So the Saints, yet another road team I have beating the home team, as they will top the Panthers. Eagles visiting the Bills. By far the, I'd say, probably the most difficult game to really pick. I mean, Jets, Pats are always tough. But Eagles, Bills, that's a tough one. Which Bills team is going to show up? More importantly, which Eagles team? Is Vic going to be able to play? I think he'll play. You got LaShawn McCoy, DeSean Jackson, and this is a very potent Bills offense, but they haven't been able to get it done, and they can't stop anyone defensively. The Bills have Fred Jackson. I think they'll run him pretty liberally. The question is, will they be able to complete some passes? I'm going upset on this one, because I think despite the records, most people will pick the Eagles. I'm saying Bills at home, upset the Eagles, and the dream team goes to 1-4. I just think that Fitzpatrick and Steve Johnson are going to be able to hook up a couple times. I think that the soft middle of the defense isn't going to be able to contain Fred Jackson. And I believe that the Eagles, you know, they'll make it competitive, but I just don't think that they're going to be able to overcome a decent Bills defense and, you know, too much problems on their offensive line. That's my upset special. Moving on to the Bucs and the 49ers, both 3-1 teams, surprisingly so, but I think the Bucs are actually a better team than the Niners are. I know the Niners are at home. You know, I feel like I'm picking too many away teams, but I think Josh Freeman and LeGarrette Blount and the boys are going to use the momentum from this Colts victory, or this Colts defeat of the Colts, to really sort of jumpstart the rest of the season for them. 49ers, I don't buy. I just don't buy them right now. They have too many question marks. I think they end up losing this game. I think the Bucs are going to be able to take it to them. Also, a factor will be, is Frank Gore healthy? Is he going to continue to be healthy? I like the Bucs. I mentioned the Jets and Pats as probably being the other very difficult game to pick. And the Jets visiting in New England, that's rough. That is really rough. The offensive line is a travesty for the Jets. Mark Sanchez is just getting hammered behind it. The run game is not working. The defense is going to play well. The defense, they're going to make Brady's life hell. The question is, can the offense move the ball? And the answer right now seems to be no. And as that's the case, you know, you've got a New England Patriots offense that can score all the time. I just can't see the Jets overcoming the Pats, and it pains me to say so. But I have a feeling the Jets are going to end up at 2-3 now and have to really turn things around. This has been a disastrous road trip for them, and I really hope that, honestly, they take a look at that offensive line and the havoc that its lack of talent and depth have wrought on the last three games and do something. Something about it, because this is disastrous. But I'm going with the Pats as much as it makes me cry to do it. Broncos welcome the Chargers. You want my honest opinion? All right, I'm picking the Broncos because I desperately need them to get closer to that 8-8, 500 record that I predicted. However, between you and me, and I know you won't tell anyone else, don't tell Nagler, but I'm pretty sure the Chargers are going to win this game. This is why. The Broncos cannot score. Once they get in the red zone, they just don't have what it takes to do it. I think that Brandon Lloyd's going to probably have a pretty good game. I think Eric Decker's going to be fine, but I just don't think they're going to be able to keep up. Phillip Rivers is going to explode at any minute, and I think this is the week that he does it. I think Ryan Matthews and Mike Tolbert will both have good games. The biggest question for the Chargers is how healthy are Malcolm Floyd and Vincent Jackson? I mean, Antonio Gates is almost assuredly out. So I'm picking the Broncos. But I do think the Chargers, you know, it kind of comes down to, now that I've talked about it, now I'm actually feeling confident about the Broncos' victory. So Vincent Jackson's got problems. Malcolm Floyd's got problems. No Antonio Gates. I don't know, kids. I would normally probably pick the Chargers, but contractually I'm obligated until I'm at 8-8 to pick the Broncos, and they really do have a shot to win. They could find a way to get Tebow involved. It'll be interesting to see. Next up, Packers Falcons. It really irritates me being on a Packers website, by the way, that I keep picking the Packers. I'd like to cheese off Corey, but I guess can't do it right now. The Falcons offensive line is a mess. I think the defense of the Packers has some significant issues, but I don't think it's going to matter this time. I think Julio Jones is going to have a rough game. I think Roddy White, if he plays and is healthy, he'll probably have an okay game. And Michael Turner will be able to run the ball, but I don't think it's going to be enough. And by and large, Matt Ryan's not going to have any time. So I'm taking the Packers in Atlanta. Yet another dog. Not dog, but another road dog, I guess. And finally, Bears-Lions. I will take the home team Lions in this. The Bears have been able to move the ball on occasion, but they're not protecting Cutler. Forte, he's catching balls out of the backfield, but having problems running the ball overall. And I just think you match up the defenses here, and the Lions' defense are so much better than the Bears. I expect the Lions to win this one, not in a laugher, but by significant margin. So I definitely think the Lions are going to win this one. So there's my home team. So, as I said, Steelers, Texans, Colts, Bengals, Giants, Cards, Saints, Bills, Bucks, Pats, Broncos, Packers, and Lions. A lot of road teams winning in my book this week. Lots and lots. So that's going to do it in this slightly elongated episode of The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. Thank you for joining me. Hope you guys have had a good time. You can always reach me on Twitter, Andrew_Garda, or email me either at garda@footballguys.com or thunderingblurb@gmail.com. And, of course, you can hit us up over at Cheesehead TV. Make sure that you tune in Wednesday night or on iTunes for Packers Transplants. And always check out the site for great NFL and Packers takes. 24/7, 365, Cheesehead TV is here to serve your football needs. I'm Andrew Garda for the absent Aaron Nagler. We will see you next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Peace out. You've been listening to The Hard Count with Aaron Nagler and Andrew Garda.
Let's go again!
Word!